Only a Game is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
Little League Dad. The phrase suggests a red-faced, foul-mouthed knucklehead roaring at the coach who doesn't bat the dad's kid third in the lineup and start him on the mound, or threatening the teenaged umpire who dares to call a strike on the dad's future Hall of Famer. But Jesse Katz, late youth league coach and the baseball commissioner of the Monterey Park Sports Club in Southern California, worked to create an environment in which such behavior would be recognized as buffoonish and eliminated rather than tolerated as inevitable. In his exceptionally candid memoir, The Opposite Field, Jesse Katz tells the story of his own development as a parent, coach, commissioner, and member of a community that grew up around a kid's ball field. When we had the opportunity to discuss the book this week, I began by asking Jesse Katz to talk a little about how he rediscovered baseball long after he thought he'd outgrown it.
Well, you know, there was something about becoming a father that, reawakened the baseball gene, if you will. I had left behind my Little League days decades earlier up in Portland, Oregon, and had sort of developed a bit of a jaundiced view about baseball and sports in general, that it was kind of the realm of, frat boys, something bougie and frivolous. Maybe I'm not wrong about that, but, having a child, having a son in particular, I suddenly, just was overwhelmed by this desire to, fill him in on all of that and take these experiences that for me seemed very carefree as a kid, and making sure that he had a taste of that.
You ended up putting a tremendous amount of time and energy into La Loma in Monterey Park, California, the park where you coached and where your son played. How did your efforts change the community?
Well, first of all, we had a baseball program that was essentially disintegrating before our very eyes. There were families, hundreds of families, bailing out and equipment missing and debts piling up. It was really, a nightmare story, probably not entirely unfamiliar to people, but, it often happens with volunteer organizations. Mm-hmm. I felt that we were in danger of really missing out on baseball altogether. On the surface, I'm fixing a baseball league, but inside, I'm dealing with some of my own, demons and predilections and longings and shortcomings. And baseball for my son and I has been this bond, this glue that's tied us together. And as my life got a little bit more difficult, and as my marriage was falling apart, and as I was struggling with a stepson who was straying, baseball also became this kind of buffer and insulation. It was the thing that was going to, be our refuge and protect us from all these other travails. So I had some selfish reasons as well.
You say at several points when you're trying to wrestle with your role as commissioner of the league, I'm a writer. I'm not a leader. And yet you managed to transform yourself into that role.
Well, as a writer, a journalist, we're trained observers. We're not used to being right in the center of things. My approach to journalism is usually fly on the wall, and suddenly I was thrust into the spotlight, and I was being evaluated as to what kind of person I was and what my values and judgments were, and it was a very unfamiliar and uncomfortable feeling at first.
You present yourself in the book as the antithesis of the bad Little League parent cliche, which we're all familiar with. You don't scream at your players. You don't bench them for making errors. You don't make them walk home after losses. But late in your son's Little League career, I think he was 12 years old, you put Max on the mound when he was ill and had a fever. And when you got home, you found that Max had wet his pants. Could you read the end of the chapter in which you tell that story, please?
Okay. I left him alone in the bathroom and went to lie down. I took off my glasses and hid my eyes under my forearm. What was I doing to this kid? What thing did I think I was affirming? I had pushed him to some ridiculous limit, drained him of everything he had to give. He was too numb to be elated. I was too stricken. By the next season, if we did this again, he would be 13, and from there and beyond, not the same boy he was tonight, the boy who had grown up at La Loma, the boy who had made me what I was. Max bundled himself in sweats and curled up next to me, on the same side his mother once had. I rested my hand on his back. For the first time in years, maybe for the last time, my son fell asleep in my bed.
Did that night change your attitude as a coach?
I don't know if it changed my attitude as a coach as much as it did as a father. Hmm. I had a real keen appreciation at that moment that whatever we had experienced at La Loma and, yes, whatever ridiculous extremes I'd pushed him to, it was going to come to an end sooner or later, that probably before I, faster than I realized, I wasn't going to get to be his coach anymore. And at a certain point, not be the father who really knew everything about him anymore. And so I think at that moment, I realized whatever seasons remained, whatever final games remained, I was going to try to be that person who kicked back a little bit and relished our time together.
Kicking back and relishing time with your son, it wasn't the easiest thing to do, especially when you were the commissioner of the league, because the challenges in organizing that group were daunting at best. With the benefit of a couple of years of perspective, can you say whether you made more friends than you did enemies during your tenure as commissioner?
Well, we'll have to see when the book comes out.
Well, that's an interesting way to put it, because this is an exceptionally candid memoir. You write about the intimate relationship that you had with your assistant commissioner, a woman named Carmen, who was married at the time and had lots of children. Is Carmen okay with this book?
Carmen and I have talked. She was a little taken aback by the detail that was included, but I think she understands. As do my son and my parents and everyone else who's important in my life, that, you know, honesty is in the end the best policy, and that these things that seem embarrassing or at least inconvenient are the things that make us human as well.
The community that you helped to build around La Loma seems to be, during the time that the book covers, very vibrant. And then, of course, you have to turn the league over to somebody else. You're not going to be the commissioner for life. Has the community survived your resignation as commissioner?
Well, hopefully the league and the game is bigger than I am. it's actually, we're on our... the second commissioner beyond me, the first couple that I anointed as my successors, they lasted for two seasons and were tested as well and left under a bit of a cloud of animosity and bitterness and probably feeling beleaguered and unappreciated. I don't know as much about the new guy running it right now. I've kind of kept my distance from the park, but baseball does go on. And, I'm pleased that there is still something called the Monterey Park Sports Club and a park called La Loma where kids are playing baseball.
Do you ever just wander over there when there's nobody else around and kind of let your memories accumulate, because you have so many of that park?
I don't go there very often, but the times that I have dropped by have been very special, of late in particular. I was there last month with my son, Max. It was during the wildfires that were sweeping across the San Gabriel Mountains here, And it was a real ominous day, as a matter of fact. I mean, the sky was, you know, blackened, and there was ash hanging in the air. And my son's 16 now. He's a junior in high school. He's a big kid. And we took a bucket of balls to La Loma, and there was nobody that was there. It was just the two of us. And, you know, it felt like the apocalypse was, you know, descending on L.A., and we were able to carve out this little space, this kind of secret hidden park, and have a few minutes of just absolute pleasure together.
You coached Max from his earliest t-ball days until he was playing high school baseball. How well have you handled the transition from coach to spectator?
It's not as easy as you might think. You know, one of the things that takes place at the end of the book is my desire to help out his high school team. Mm-hmm. The baseball program has more or less crumbled at his school, and I volunteered myself one more sort of reckless leap to be the JV baseball coach during his freshman year, thinking that as a freshman, he might be good enough to make the JV team, so I was going to be the JV coach and get this one last season with him. And as it turned out, he was either good enough or the program was debilitated enough that he was able to leap right up to varsity as a freshman. And I was left with this very awkward experience of not being able to see him play because our games were on the same days, but at opposite fields. Mm-hmm. And so I had done all this scheming to try to hold on together, extend his childhood by one more season, and I really sort of screwed myself over in that respect. So that was a good lesson for grabbing a bag of seeds and taking a seat on the bleachers and just cheering.
Jesse Katz is the author of The Opposite Field, a memoir published by Crown. He joined me from KPCC in Pasadena, California. Jesse, thank you very much for speaking with me.
Thanks.
My conversation with Jesse Katz about his new book, The Opposite Field, will be featured on this week's program. I'll also be talking with LA Times football reporter Chris Dufresne about the college football season to date, and we'll have a story about the origin and the 100th anniversary of perhaps the most recognizable college football fight song of all time, with apologies in advance to everybody who roots for Notre Dame. The umpiring during the baseball postseason has a lot of fans scratching their heads, if not heaving heavy objects through their TV screens, and we'll take up that issue with the assistance of former Major League Baseball Commissioner Faye Vincent. And then we'll have a story about beagling, which will no doubt cause Charlie Pierce to say, "Sports!" So join us, and remember, you can always hear the program at onlyagame.org.